clarify, we nowadays have an additional issue as well. We're not sure what the color is.
Yeah. So it's hard to know. We'll get to that perhaps. As far as the color of the tcheles, what we know is that Rashi brings it in the Torah, right? That the mitzvah of tcheles is that the tcheles reminds us. Rashi says that the tcheles reminds us of the sky. Right, that when a person would see the blue, he would look, he would identify tcheles domel yam, bayam domel rakia, for rakia domel kisei akava. That when one would look at the tcheles, he would be reminded of the sky, and then he would in turn think of Hashem. So the color apparently is the color blue, but it's not 100% clear, because if you look at the Rambam on this very sheet in the next halacha, so the Rambam describes how exactly the tcheles was processed. So he says, "Ketzad sovin tcheles shel tzitzis." How exactly did you dye the wool? So he says, "Lochin atzemer." They would take the wool, v'sharon oso besid. It would be put in a certain chemical, v'achakach, in a certain element, v'achakach mechapsin oso achi enoki. They would cleanse it. It would be perfectly clean wool. Umarsichin oso ba'ola. Then it would be cooked up. Ukiotzibo kederech shasavon osin keshiklos ayin. And then we would bring the dog, the fish, the sea creature, chilozon, v'hudag shedome eino le'ein hayam. And this is a fish or a creature which the color is similar to the ocean. And then he says, v'damo shachar kedio. But the blood of it, meaning the extract of the fish, the extract of this chilozon, is black like ink. So here you have already a question. It's black like ink, and yet you're telling me that it's similar to the color of the sky. The color of the sky is not black. The color of the ocean is never black, right? So how does that work out? So apparently it seems that when it is extracted, it is one color, and then it changes. And then whether it's due to exposure to the sun or whatever it is, but in the process, in the manufacturing process, this extract of the chilazon apparently starts out being black and eventually turns to be blue. In fact, it is mentioned that it's brought down in the Sfarim. If you ever wondered how come on a talus, on a traditional talus, you have what some people call the racing stripes, right? You have those black stripes on the talasim, and what is the idea behind that? So the one of the explanations that's given is because that's supposed to be a reminder of the tcheles. That's supposed to remind the person of the tcheles that once was. That's why it's placed on talasim. So you'll say, well, then it should be blue, right? Now, today people, in fact, do sometimes have blue stripes on their talasim, but I think that's a relatively recent development. That wasn't the tradition for hundreds of years. So why was it black? So the answer is, I think, based on this Rambam, because of the fact that initially the color is black, and then it turns. It turns into a blue color, and that is what is used to dye. Yes?
I actually saw this process in Israel, and what's interesting is that it turns, the first thing when it comes out, the wool is purple.
It's purple, okay.
And as the sun, as it hits in the sun, it turns blue.
Begins to turn blue, okay.
It's actually deep purple.
Deep purple.
It comes out of the tank.
Okay. So it could be that's what they mean when they say it's black. In other words, it's a very deep purple color, and therefore, yeah. I saw a video on this also. It also appeared that way. Right, okay.
Also the name Phoenicia, which is where they find this Murex smell.
Yes.
Phoenicia in Greek means purple.
Means purple. How do you like that? Okay, fine. Thank you. So there you have it. So the Rambam tells us that this is the source of the tcheles, and he says that so the Rambam tells us that the source, the one and only source of this tcheles is from the chilazon fish or sea creature, okay? And he says, ubiyam hamelach hu motzui, that this can be found in the Dead Sea. So says the Rambam. Now, the truth of the matter is that I don't know what the Rambam based that on. He might have meant in later times it was found there, because we know from the Torah that the tcheles, the chilazon was found actually in a different part of Eretz Yisrael altogether, because the Torah tells us in Parshas Vezos HaBracha that we read on Simchas Torah. So the Torah tells us that when the Moshe Rabbeinu was giving the blessings to the various tribes, so he spoke to the tribe of Zvulun, and he said that Zvulun will be, let's see here, he says, that they will be associated with the waters, right? Zvulun were the marine merchants. They were the people who went out and did the business. You know, the Psukim here and elsewhere indicate that they had a unique relationship with the tribe of Yisachar. And then it says, Usfune tmunechol means those precious items that are hidden in the sand. Okay, the treasures that are hidden in the sand. What does it mean, the treasures that are hidden in the sand? So in the Sifri, in the Medrash, we are told, and Rashi here pretty much quotes it, that this is a reference to three things. That the tribe of Zvulun, which was situated in the northwestern part of Eretz Yisrael, the tribe of Zvulun was privileged to have three things. And they were Tarius, V'chilazon, V'zchuchis Levana. That there were three treasures that they were given. There were three specific, they weren't given a tremendous amount of land, but for their parnasa, they were given three items. And they were, number one, a certain type of fish, which it indicates in if you take the lashon of the Medrash literally, it sounds like what we would call today tuna fish, that they had access to. That was one item that was their business. The second thing was that they had very clear sand. And the sand on the beaches of the Shevet Zvulun was used to make clear glass. And that was a special sand that they had. And the third thing was what they had was the chilazon. Was that these creatures were in their section of Eretz Yisrael. They would come up, it seems from the Chazal in different places, that they would actually come up onto the seashore. You didn't have to go into the water to get them. That they were coming up and they would just go and there they would be. And that's how the mitzvah of Tcheles was fulfilled with this chilazon type of creature. Now, what exactly it is the question that has intrigued people for, which sea creature it is has intrigued people for many years. And whether, in fact, we should even bother to try to identify it has also intrigued people for many years. So, for example, if you turn here to page 3 in the Medrash Tanchuma, so we find that the Medrash tells us that originally, if you go, let's say this would be 2, 4, 5 lines from the bottom. At the end of the line, Kishahayat Ched, he says, Avshav, Ein Lanu Ela Lavan. This is in the Medrash Tanchuma, okay, which was edited, I don't know the exact year, but probably around the 6th century, perhaps a little bit later. It says that we only have the white. Why? Shatcheles nignaz. Shatcheles nignaz, says the Medrash, that the tcheles has been concealed, has been put away, so to speak. That's what the Medrash seems to indicate. Okay, now, what that means is a subject of tremendous debate, but it's just an intriguing statement in the Chazal that apparently there was a disappearance of the Tcheles. There was a disappearance. That's what it would seem like from here. What we do know is it's very hard to piece it together, because elsewhere we find the Gemara in Masechet Shabbos tells us that they were still producing Tcheles in the times of the Gemara. But so the around the time that this Medrash was written, they still had it. There's no question about it. However, somewhere at that point, there was a sudden break, and that was the end of Tcheles, and people lost track of where you got it, and eventually of what the true source was. Now, why this happened is unclear. From a practical standpoint, There are people that make the claim that that's because the scientific world was coming up with other colors and other sources of coloring, and therefore people will tell you that they no longer needed to be reliant on such things. In other words, back in the day when the ability to color something in a permanent way was rare, so the Goyim also were interested in the Tchelis. In fact, we find in the Chazal statements to that effect that in certain periods that they even after the Churban Beis Hamikdash, they encouraged at a certain point the Tchelis because they wanted that people should be harvesting this color. So some claim that over the passage of time, when they developed other colors from other sources, it wasn't so important to the Goyim. And that, combined with the fact that a large segment of the Jewish community was outside of Eretz Yisrael, which was the source of the Tchelis, the source of the Chilazon in the first place, so therefore the shift was to Bavel and to other places. That's where the center of Jewish learning and Jewish life became, or to Europe and Rome, different places, but away from Eretz Yisrael. So the combination of the factors made it that it wasn't easily accessible, and the Goyim weren't interested in having it either as much as they had been previously, and therefore it sort of got lost in the shuffle. That's what some people say. But that, I don't know, you know, from a traditional standpoint, if that's necessarily what we would say. It seems here from the Medrash that there's perhaps a deeper significance to this, that Shatcheles Nignas, that the Tchelis was somehow, that this was almost like a divine decree that the Tchelis should be lost from the Jewish people. The fact of the matter is that over the generations, they developed the belief, which is put forth in the writings of the Arizal, that the location of the Chilazon would be connected to the coming of Mashiach, and that in reality the Tchelis, that this was not a, whether or not, however you explain why it got lost from us in the first place, but the Arizal held, and this is all the Mekubalim, many of the Mekubalim follow this belief, that there's no point in looking for it because of the fact that it's hidden from us until the arrival of Mashiach, and then it will reemerge. However, not everyone shared that belief. And as I said earlier, so the Radzina Rebbe in the late 1800s, who had a very different belief, he believed that identifying the Chilazon would actually hasten the coming of Mashiach. So he went on a search, and he identified a certain creature that he felt was a remarkable thing. He traveled, if you picture a Hasidish Rebbe in Europe, what it must have looked like, that he traveled to Italy and sat down with the scientists of the time and actually came up with an identification of a sea creature that gave forth this type of coloring. And he told his chassidim that even though he wasn't sure, he said, I'm not 100% sure, but based on the sources that we find in the Chazal, the certain identifications that we find, I think this matches up. Okay? It matches up. Now, if you look here, if you turn to page 5, what identifications do we have for the Tchelis? So what we're going to see here is not the exclusive list, but this is something that is pointed to very much by the modern day people. On the very top line here in the Gemara Menachos, it says, Tana Rabbanan, Chilazon Zehu Gufo Dom Eliam. Okay, the Chilazon creature, okay, its body resembles the ocean. Now this is a controversial point, as we'll see. In other words, the simple meaning of this would indicate that the creature itself, it has a bluish color. Okay? Zeu gufo domoyam, ubriyaso domoladag, and it is a living creature. It is similar to a fish. It is similar to a fish. Now this again is going to be scrutinized. What did that mean? And then it says, va'ole echad l'shivim shana, and it emerges once every 70 years, ubidamo tsovin tcheles, and with its blood, with the material that's found in it, they dye the tcheles. Lefikach damav yikarim. Therefore, tcheles was always very expensive. Therefore, the tcheles was very expensive. Now, one could imagine if you had something that emerged only once every 70 years, so you know it would be very expensive in to have it in all times. Now, what these what these identifications mean is hotly contested amongst various people, because what they have identified today as the tcheles, the item that has been today in the modern era has been identified, is a type of a snail, which is known as the Murex trunculus. It's a snail, and that, if you ever see a picture of it, which they have, you could go online, you could see them actually extracted from this from this snail. It is not, the color of it is not at all similar to the color of the ocean. However, it is similar in color to the seabed. In other words, when you look at it, they extract it from, I don't know, from the seabed or from reefs or different things. And it blends in perfectly. So when they take it out, it in no way is it blue on the outside. But they claim that that's what it means, domaliam. That domaliam means that it's not similar to the color of the ocean, but it's similar to the elements of the ocean. And therefore, if you look there, you'll see that it blends right in. It doesn't stand out. It blends in together with the color of the seabed, and that's what's meant by domaliam. Okay, the second statement here, brioso domaladag, that it's similar to a fish. So again, we have an issue that it's the snail is not a fish. But again, the explanation is given that all they meant by that was that it's a living creature. In other words, it's not a plant, and it's not something that is non-living. It's a living creature. In that sense, it's similar to a fish. Technically, today, I don't know, I'm not up on my marine science well enough. I don't think people would call a snail a fish. But nevertheless, you'll say, but that's what they meant. That the Gemara was talking in general terms, that's what they meant. Okay, as far as the once every 70 years, it's hard to know exactly what that means, because we do find in the Chazal that in the times that Tcheles was observed, they had quite a bit of it. They had quite a bit of it. How do we know this? Because if one looks at if you look here on page 6, so on the bottom section of page 6, there is a tshuva from the Radvaz, Rav David Ben Zimra, was an Egyptian rabbi. We've mentioned him, we've quoted him many, many times. And the Radvaz, who lived in the 16th century, was discussing the Gemara in Shabbos, which speaks about the trapping and the harvesting of the chilazon. The Gemara talks about whether you're allowed to do it on Shabbos. So he says, if you look on the line that begins in the bold print with the word tshuva, he says, in the middle of that line, he says, Sherech chilazon matzihu biyam, that the chilazon is commonly found in the ocean, uvechelkel shel zvulun, haya ola me'elav min hayam el hayabosha. That it was found in the portion of Zvolun, which was in the northwest section of Eretz Yisrael, right around the place that we today call Haifa, right around there. In fact, the Gemara it elsewhere identifies Haifa as the place where the chilazon was found. And it says, so the Radvaz tells us that at that time, you didn't even have to go into the water to get it. They would come out onto the sand, onto the land. Vayu malachtin also, and they would just collect them. Va'achar shegolu Yisrael lo haya ole. But after the Jews were sent into exile, it stopped coming out. V'hishir nevuzradon be'eretz madal ta'am lekarmim v'lanovim. Right, so when Nebuzradan, who was the general of Nebuchadnezzar, came into Eretz Yisrael, so the pasuk says that he left behind certain people in Eretz Yisrael, v'amru chazal eilu tzadeh chilazon, that he left behind the people who knew how to go and get it. Because when the Jews were exiled from Eretz Yisrael, they had the destruction of the first base of Mikdash, it stopped coming out on its own. You had to now go find it, and only a few experts amongst the Jewish population knew how to get it. So therefore, when they were exiled, this was left in place. Says the Radvaz, Mashma shehayu tzrichin l'tsodo. Okay? So at that point, you needed to trap it. Says the Radvaz further, V'chein b'maisa ha-mishkan, hayu smuchim liyam akadmoni yamsuf. The Radvaz says that where did they get the original tcheles from? In the Midbar, right? When the mitzvah of tzitzis was given, and when the dyeing of the curtains for the Mishkan, he said that they went to the Yamsuf. They went to the Yamsuf. They went, they were not that far from the Yamsuf. So he says, Sharei ein bin Yamsuf l'har Sinai el adavar mu'it, because there's a very short distance between the Yamsuf and the Har Sinai. V'hayohochel Yamsuf, it's sudden also. Shohayinimzasham. They would go there and they would get it. So in other words, it seems that there was in the initial times when Klai Yisrael was living in Eretz Yisrael in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, it was easy to get. It would come out on its own. It would come out. You didn't have to send divers. You know, you didn't have in those days the ability like we have today to dive with deep sea diving or whatever it is to extract it. If you look at the videos that they have of how they get the modern day tcheles, they have to send divers in to extract these items from the ocean. You say, well, how was that originally done? The answer is that they didn't have to do that because it came out. It came on. They washed onto the shore. After the Churban of Beis HaMikdash, so then things began to change. So it's hard to know when the Gemara says that it comes once every 70 years, what that means. Does that mean that once every 70 years, even today, they emerge, but other than that, you have to go get it? It's hard to know. These are some of the signs that the Gemara gives as far as identification of Tchelos. So again, we have the fact that the basic elements are that it's a very precious item, the Gemara tells us, and the fact that its body is similar to the yam, and it is a living creature like a fish. These are the signs. So we're sort of left to, you know, in a mystery as to what it is. So as I said, the Rezina Rebbe claimed that he knew what it was, and even though, as I say, he wasn't 100% sure, but he told his Hasidim that I'm pretty sure it is, and what do you have to lose? If you don't put it on, so you'll be no worse than anybody else. In other words, everybody else has white tzitzis, exclusively white tzitzis. So the truth of the matter is that theoretically the tzitzis could be any color, right? So therefore, he said, so I'm pretty sure I'm right, so do it this way. And if you do it this way, it could very well be that you're fulfilling the mitzvah of tchelis. And if not, you're not any worse than anybody else. Yes. Right. Right. But let's say it's, no. So the point is that what does it mean it's puzzle? It's puzzle doesn't mean that it invalidates the other tzitzis. Puzzle means it's puzzle for tchelis. In other words, but it would not disqualify the other tzitzis. In fact, the Rambam in the first halacha on that page, which I did not read, states that even though we have the mitzvah of tchelis, but one can fulfill the mitzvah of tzitzis without tchelis. In other words, you have a mitzvah of tchelis, but if you don't have the tchelis, so you do it the way we do it. So this is what the Rezina Rebbe told his Hasidim, and he wrote several svarim. He was a very great gong, and he knew all the sources from the Shas and from the Midrashim, and he went around Eastern Europe championing his cause, and he went to all the great rabbis of the day, Rav Yitzchak Elchanan Spector and Rav Yosef Dov Soloveitchik, and he went to Rav Yeshua Kuttner, the greatest poskim of that time, and not one of them accepted what he said.
First of all, what was it? His feeling was not a snail.
His
something called a cuttlefish.
Correct. His feeling was that it was
that actual fish that exists.
A cuttlefish, right, because he, I believe, was concerned about the statement that it's a dog. And he therefore said that it's a fish. I think it's called an inkfish today. It's not the snail. In other words, the Rezina Rebbe's
it's a squid.
A squid. Okay, so that was not what they hold today to be the tchelos. But he was sure that he was right. And if you read his writings, it's amazing how he was so convinced he was right that he wrote scathing letters to the poskim saying, why don't you even consider what I'm saying? You know, maybe I'm right. You know, he said, even if I'm not as learned as you are, but you know, the fact of the matter is, I checked it out. I did the research. Why are you not, you know, he felt they weren't giving him the time of day. But the fact of the matter is that to this day, even, there are Rezina Chassidim out there who have the tchelos that's made from this squid or this cuttlefish that the Rezina Rebbe identified. Now, the truth of the matter is there were some that accepted the Rezina Rebbe's opinion, but the majority of the poskim did not. Now, why didn't they is really a shear in itself. There were those that said that since the fish has been available all this time And it's not like he's discovered something new. He just checked it out, and he said that the cuttlefish was known. It was a known fish. I think it was called an inkfish because of the fact that they knew that you get that color from this fish. So he said the fact that it's been known to us, and yet until this day nobody wears it, constitutes a misora to the contrary. It constitutes a negative misora, meaning that it's as if we have a tradition that this is not it. Because if it was, why are we first waking up now? Where were all the rabbis of the previous generations? Meaning that one of the fundamental beliefs of misora is that the chachamim in every generation assess the situation. And there are certain times where, even though you may think something is right, but if it has not been the accepted practice in Klal Yisrael for generations, then that in itself is sufficient to dismiss it from consideration. Because the belief in misora, which we have, Moshe Kibbol Torah Misinai, or misora Yehoshua, and so forth, dictates that the Torah is not just a book that's open for interpretation, but that there's a tradition in how things are done. And if it's not done this way, so then that constitutes a halacha, that it's obviously not done this way. So this argument was made by many of the leading rabbis. The Rezina Rebbe had answers to that. It's very fascinating to read, and you know, one could just, when you read it, you could sense his frustration because he put so much effort into it and he felt that they weren't really giving him a fair shake. But the fact of the matter is that his claim to Tchelus was only accepted by his chassidim. Now what happened was that about 30 years later, 20 to 30 years later, Rav Herzog, who was the first chief rabbi in Eretz Yisrael, did research into this. In fact, he wrote, I believe, his PhD dissertation on this topic.
University of London, he wrote his PhD on
the trail. Yeah, right. And he proved through various things, amongst them chemical tests, that the color blue that was coming from this fish was not really coming from the fish itself. And on that basis, through the tests, he pretty much put to rest what the Rezina Rebbe had said.
And he pointed to a different snail.
He pointed in the direction of what we have today. The problem that he identified this trunculus, Murex trunculus snail. He, through his research, he said, that's what I believe it is. But he had a problem. His problem was that snail did not give off the blue color, it gave off a purplish color, a darker color. And thus, he himself concluded that, what could I tell you? I don't think the Rezina Rebbe was right. I think that I'm right, except that I can't be right because it doesn't work out. It's not the color that the Torah says, that the tradition says. So, as is known in the early 1980s, a professor in Eretz Yisrael, Otto Elsner, by accident, discovered that when you take this dye from this snail, the color that comes out of it, and you leave it in the sun, they say that one time he was working in his lab, and he wanted to go get himself a cup of coffee, and he took the dye that he had extracted from this snail that he had gathered in a container, a tester, whatever it was, and he left it by the window in his haste to run out and get a cup of coffee, and when he came back, lo and behold, it had turned blue. And thus, he put forth the idea that this is the answer to Rav Herzog's problem. That Rav Herzog said that I have identified this thing, but it's not the right color. Well, lo and behold, when you put it in the sun, it is the right color. So with this in mind, it came the belief that the movement, the modern-day Tchelus movement, began that, here you have it. This is the Tchelus that we've been looking for all these generations. And thus, it slowly but surely, one began to see the distribution of Tchelus. It's not an inexpensive item. Obviously, to get that dye from those snails requires quite a few of them. It's an expensive proposition. Now, the question is, so we know that still it is not in the mainstream, and why not? And the biggest question that would be out there would be, well, what do you have to lose? In other words, there's two questions. One question is, if somebody's going to be opposed to this, so you're going to have to ask yourself two questions. First of all, why are you opposed in general? And even if you have doubts, but what do you have to lose? And furthermore, one could make the halachic argument that why don't you say Safik Daraisa L'Chumra? That why don't we say that just like we know that if you have a question about something pertaining to a mitzvah in the Torah, you have to be strict, you have to be machmir. So it's possible that this is it. Unless you, in other words, if you're going to come out and say this is for sure not it, then okay, case closed. But if you short of that, so then good. So it's a suffix. So if it's a suffix, why not? Not only why not do it, but maybe you're obligated to do it. Suffix daraisa l'chumra. Just like we find that the Shulchan Aruch tells us that if a person has not put on tefillin or not taken a luluf on the appropriate day, and now it comes to the period, the sunset, the shkia, and now you have the period of ben hashmashus, which is a doubt. It's a halachic doubt whether that period is considered day or night. The halacha is you have to put on tefillin, or you have to shake a lulav. You blow a shofar, you don't say the bracha because it's a doubt, but you have to do the mitzvah. Why? Because safek daraisa l'chumra. So why would that not apply here? So just very quickly, because I know we're way over the time, but some of these issues were addressed in a tshuva by Rav Elyashiv that was written to a Rav who I know very well in New York, Rav Feivel Cohen, who went to him in the late 1990s when this was becoming very widespread, and asked him what his opinion was, sat down and discussed it. So he said as follows. So the Rav Elyashiv took what seems to be the attitude that is reflected by the fact that it's not widely practiced. And he took a little bit of a skeptical approach. He said, look, he said, the fact that people have identified it today, he said, this is nothing new. He writes in the second paragraph, he says, on page 6, he writes that, there were other people who also were convinced they were right. The Rezina Rebbe was a great gaon and wrote 3 svarim filled with proofs that his identification was correct, and yet it was proven subsequently that he was not correct. So therefore, he said, even though today we seem to know, or we think we know, but that's not a new development, and therefore we have to be somewhat skeptical. Now you'll say, yes, so what? But why not do it? Is there any stronger argument than that? So he quotes from the Beis Halevi, from Rabbi Yosef Dov Soloveitchik of Brisk in the late 1800s, who said, as I mentioned earlier, that by the fact that it was known to people and they didn't wear it, it constitutes a negative tradition, a negative Mesorah, okay? And then he quotes from Rabbi Yeshua Kutna, the Sefer Yeshua's Malko, that he says that we find in the writings of the Ari that there will not be tchelos again until the time of Mashiach, and on that basis he was quite skeptical as to the acceptance of the modern day chilazon. But then he says an interesting point. Then he says, if one looks in the laws of tzitzis, of Arachayim, Simin Tes, Yesh Omrim, Shetzarech, Lasos, HaTzitzis, Mitzeva, HaTalis. If you turn over to the final page here on page 7, the Shulchan Aruch tells us an unknown, not so well known halacha in the Hilchos Tzitzis. And that is in Sif Hei, the Shulchan Aruch says, Yesh Omrim, Shetzarech, Lasos, HaTzitzis, Mitzeva, HaTalis. That you're supposed to make the tzitzis the same color as the talus. You should not have a green. In other words, theoretically, a person could put tzitzis on any four-cornered garment. So when you walk into shul, you could, if you wanted to, you could see people in every imaginable color. And even today, with the more modern world, you're starting to see more of this, but it's never gone to the extreme. You don't see people walking in with red talasim or green talasim with the tzitzis, right? You don't see that. The most you would see would be perhaps stripes on it, but the garment itself still remains white to this day. The reason for this is the Shulchan Aruch says that the tzitzis have to be the same color as the talus, and therefore to explain why you don't have green talasim is because we don't make the tzitzis green. Now theoretically you could say so go make the tzitzis green also, so I guess that's totally counter to tradition, so we don't do that. We right, the not just counter to tradition, it's white, it's not an option. In other words, the halacha is tzitzis could be either white and the tchelis, those are your choices. Okay, so therefore the tzitzis themselves have to be white, so because they're white the garment is white also. Now, says so Rav Elyashiv said, and the Shulchan Aruch says, "Medaktikim noagim kain." The Shulchan Aruch says that that those people who are careful in halacha follow this practice that the tzitzis are the same color as the garment. So Rav Eliashiv said that if that's the case, if you're going to say, well, what does it hurt to have a blue string? Well, then you're not fulfilling this. In other words, you're supposed to have the tzitzis the same color as the garment. The garment is white. The tzitzis should also be white. This is what he said. Now, it doesn't, you know, in a certain sense, it doesn't seem like an overwhelmingly compelling argument to say that you shouldn't take a chance, you know, but what about the question of Safek Daraisa L'Chumra, right? So you'll say, okay, so you're running the risk of not being a medaktik. In other words, the people who are careful make sure that their strings match the color of the garment. But what about the fact that they may be right in Safek Daraisa L'Chumra? What about that? So that should override this. You have the possibility to fulfill a mitzvah Daraisa, so it's a suffix. So if it's a suffix, then that should be more important than this. Rav Eliashiv's argument doesn't seem to be in and of itself that compelling. So I'm over the time here. So the one answer which is commonly given, a very fascinating answer which was put forth by Shlomo Miller, one of the leading poskim in the world today, who's a rav in Toronto, said, and it established from sources, that the rule of Safek Daraisa L'Chumra only applies when after you did the act of Safek, you feel that you fulfilled the mitzvah. In other words, if a person did not put on tefillin, and now it's the sunset, it's the shkia, so he said, oh my gosh, I didn't put on tefillin, and now it's a question, is it day or night? So to that we say that let him put on the tefillin then, because it's a Safek, whether it's day or night, Safek Daraisa L'Chumra. But one thing is clear. After he takes off the tefillin, he can be confident that there's nothing more for him to do. Meaning that he resolved the suffix. In other words, it could be it was night, but since we have to be machmir and assume that it's day, so in the daytime I have to put on tefillin. Once I put on tefillin, there's no suffix left. However, Rav Miller said, that when it comes to this, since we're not sure if this is the tchelis, so therefore, even after you did it, you would still have the suffix. You haven't resolved the suffix by doing what you did, because you still may not have done it. So theoretically, if another person came to you and said, I have identified this as chilazon, you'd have to put that on. And then if another person came, you'd have to put that on. So Rav Miller said that in the concept of suffix daraisa l'chumra, it doesn't apply to this type of situation. In other words, again, it's a very interesting distinction. It's only said in a scenario where once you've done the act, misafik, you're finished. You can say, alright, that's it. If it's still the daytime, I fulfilled the mitzvah tefillin. If it's still the daytime, I shook a lulav, I heard the tkiyah shofar. But, in this situation where you're still gonna be left with the suffik, then we don't say suffik deraisa l'chumra. That's what he said. The bottom line is, as we all know, it's the difference of opinions here. It's hard to say for sure. The mainstream still seems to be resistant to this. And I say a lot of the leading poskim are skeptical about this. There are those who follow the hardliners on the other camp, say that they're sure that this is the chilazon. They're scientifically sure that this is the chilazon. The truth is, if you look through the various statements of the Gemara, like we did, they're stretching things a little bit to say that it appears like the yam and that it's a fish and so forth. There are stretches that are taking place, but nevertheless they feel that they're confident that they're right. But that's also a small element. I think the bigger element is in the middle of people saying, well, they may be right and there's not that much to lose. So, okay, that's the question. There you have it. Okay, as Rav Eliashiv went on the record, and I know this Rav very, very well personally, and you know, he spoke to him many times, and he insisted that, you know, he was not a fan of the chilazon, the modern day tchelos, but there are those who do, and as we always say, every person should seek out his Rav to ask what they think is appropriate. Yes,